Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Lawsuits and Employee Benefits Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 27, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in U.S. Airways Incorporated versus McCutcheon. The case considers whether under the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, or ERISA, an injured employee who has had medical expenses paid through his employer's benefit plan and who then sues and recovers damages from the third party who was responsible for the injury, is required to reimburse the benefit plan in full, even when some of the damages went to cover attorney's fees. To discuss the case, we have Jason Mendro, who is a partner in the Washington, D.C. office of Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Mendro.
Today I'm going to be talking about U.S. Airways versus McCutcheon, an ERISA case that was argued before the Supreme Court on Tuesday, November 27th. The McCutcheon case concerns the interpretation of Section 502A3 of ERISA, and in particular, subsection A3B2. Section 502A3B2 presents an interesting intersection of equitable principles and contract construction. Here's what the statute says, and I'm quoting, "A civil action may be brought by a participant, beneficiary, or fiduciary to obtain appropriate equitable relief to enforce any provision of this subchapter or the terms of the plan." Now, the key language here is appropriate equitable relief to enforce the terms of the plan. And the question is whether equitable principles may limit the relief that can be recovered, even if the clear terms of an ERISA plan reject those limitations. In this particular case, it's the ERISA plan that's seeking the relief under Section 502A3, and it's seeking that relief from one of the plan's beneficiaries. So the Supreme Court's faced with the question of whether the plan is entitled to recover the full amount provided for in its documents, or whether the courts have discretion to limit that amount based on equity. Now, this probably seems like a pretty narrow question, but one amicus cited estimates that ERISA plans recover more than $1 billion a year through claims just like this one. And furthermore, for the real ERISA-files out there, the most interesting question may be this. What will the Supreme Court say about Section 502A3 claims in general? 502A3 claims were strictly limited for many years, but in 2011, the Supreme Court's decision in Amara suggested a broader view of the statute. And since then, there's been very little guidance, and onlookers are going to be interested to see whether the court suggests that the clear terms in ERISA plans can eliminate the application of equitable principles to 502A3 claims, or whether the court instead will suggest that equity always survives, even the clearest plan language, for purposes of those claims. Significantly, this case involves a twist that wasn't present in the Amara case. Unlike in Amara, there's no claim here that the ERISA plan did something unfair. It's really just a claim that the plain language of the plan itself is unfair. So what this case boils down to is whether ERISA plans are always stuck with equity in the context of 502A3 claims, or whether they can contract around it. So with that said, let's turn to the facts of this case. The defendant, James McCutcheon, was an employee of U.S. Airways, and he was a participant in the company's self-financed health benefits plan, which of course is covered by ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974. In 2003, Mr. McCutcheon was tragically injured in a car accident. The accident left one person dead and two others with severe brain injuries, and Mr. McCutcheon himself survived only with the help of emergency surgery. The medical care that saved his life cost $66,866. Fortunately for him, those expenses were all paid by the U.S. Airways Health Benefit Plan. Now, as is relatively common, the plan documents contained a provision requiring Mr. McCutcheon to repay the plan if he ever succeeded in recovering that money from somebody else. And in fact, Mr. McCutcheon retained lawyers to help him do just that. He had some success, but as will be clear, he wasn't quite successful enough. The driver that hit him had limited assets and was already being sued by other victims of the crash. Mr. McCutcheon eventually settled his claims against her for just $10,000. He was also able to recover an additional $100,000 from his own uninsured motorist coverage, for a total of $110,000 in third-party recovery. But that amount doesn't account for the fees that McCutcheon promised to his lawyers. They were promised a contingency fee of 40%. So once you take that amount out, Mr. McCutcheon's net recovery was only $66,000. Now, as you'll recall, The U.S. Airways plan paid medical expenses just over that amount, $66,866 to be exact. So McCutcheon's net recovery after paying his lawyers was $866 less than the expenses that U.S. Airways had paid for him. Nonetheless, the U.S. Airways plan asked McCutcheon to repay all of the medical expenses that the plan had covered. It cited the terms of the plan requiring reimbursement, and I'll quote, for amounts paid for claims out of any monies recovered from a third party. McCutcheon refused to pay, and when he did, the U.S. Airways plan sued him under Section 502A3 of ERISA. Now, as an aside, I'll just pause to note here that the parties' briefs to the Supreme Court indicate that McCutcheon's attorneys did eventually agree to waive their fees voluntarily. None of the parties suggest that that decision implicates any of the legal questions that are issue, and none of the justices at oral argument seem to focus on that either. But I did just want to make that clear in fairness to his attorneys. So what happened to U.S. Airways claims? Well, the trial court held that McCutcheon was in fact required by the terms of the plan to reimburse U.S. Airways in full. The Third Circuit disagreed on appeal. It reasoned that Section 502A3 of ERISA limits the plan's recovery, despite the plain terms of the plan documents, to an amount of reimbursement that is equitable and appropriate. And the Third Circuit concluded that it would not be equitable for McCutcheon to be worse off after he recovered from third parties. U.S. Airways petitioned the Supreme Court for review, posing the following question: whether Section 502A3 authorizes courts to use equitable principles to rewrite contractual language and refuse to order participants to reimburse their plan for the benefits paid, even when the plan's terms give it an absolute right to full reimbursement. As we all know, the Supreme Court took the case. So what did the parties argue? Well, U.S. Airways argued that the plain terms of the plan required the reimbursement in full. It acknowledged that the plan can only sue under 502A3 and that 502A3 only provides for appropriate equitable relief. But U.S. Airways stressed that 502A3 permits claims to enforce the terms of the plan, and those terms provided for full reimbursement. U.S. Airways also stressed the Supreme Court's 2006 decision in Sereboff versus Mid-Atlantic Medical Services. In that case, the court addressed the question of whether ERISA plans could sue for reimbursement under 502A3 at all, given the fact that those types of claims seem legal in nature and 502A3 only allows equitable relief. The court held that the answer to that question is yes. An ERISA plan can sue to enforce its reimbursement terms under 502A3 based on the equitable principle of equitable lien by agreement. It was accepted in equity that if a person agrees by contract to convey particular property that he expects to receive later to someone else, then he becomes a trustee of that property when he receives it for the benefit of the intended recipient. And by the same token, the person who's intended to receive the property owns a lien over it and can bring an equitable claim to obtain that property based on the terms of the contract. The court explained in Sereboff that this same principle, called an equitable lien by agreement, allows an ERISA plan to bring a claim in equity to obtain promised reimbursements. U.S. Airways argued that all rights regarding an equitable lien by agreement are controlled by the terms of the plan. And again, the plan agreement here, at least as the trial court construed it without objection, provided for the full reimbursement of McCutcheon's recovery from third parties. Now, Mr. McCutcheon, of course, responded that any relief under 502A3 is limited by the text of ERISA to what is appropriate and what is equitable. And he urged that it would be neither appropriate nor equitable to place him in a worse position after he undertook to obtain recovery from third parties. Now, there's certainly intuitive force to that point, but McCutcheon's legal arguments get pretty intricate from there. He pressed two main arguments. First, McCutcheon argued that this case should be decided according to equitable subrogation principles. Now, McCutcheon acknowledges that the U.S. Airways plan sought reimbursement from him directly. It didn't step into his shoes and sue based on McCutcheon's interests, the way that we usually think of subrogation working. Nonetheless, McCutcheon compared U.S. Airways to an insurer, and he argued that its reimbursement claim as an insurer is a species of broader subrogation principles that really ought to apply here. To quote McCutcheon, he said that U.S. Airways claims fall squarely within the umbrella use of the word subrogation and is therefore subject to the same equitable principles. According to those principles, an insurer can only be reimbursed from its insured to the extent that the insured would otherwise receive double recovery for the same injury. Taking back anything more would constitute unjust enrichment to the insurer. So turning to his own facts, McCutcheon stressed that his total damages and his wife's total damages from the car accident far exceeded the medical costs that U.S. Airways paid for him. In fact, they ranged from between $1 million and $1.75 million. And McCutcheon argued that only the portion of the $110,000 that he ultimately recovered from third parties that was related to his medical costs could be recovered by U.S. Airways. So based on this reasoning, McCutcheon is contending that U.S. Airways can be repaid no more than the portion of his recovery that relates directly to his medical expenses, less U.S. Airways' fair share of the legal bills that he paid. Otherwise, U.S. Airways would unjustly benefit from the services that McCutcheon paid for, and it would also receive nearly 100% of the medical expenses in return, while McCutcheon would get nearly nothing for the other losses he sustained. So that was his first argument. Second, McCutcheon argued that the equitable common fund rule establishes that his attorneys are entitled to a portion of the recovery that they won for him and for U.S. Airways as well. Under the common fund rule, lawyers who recover for persons other than themselves are entitled to take a reasonable fee from the amount that they recover. McCutcheon further argued that the common fund rule creates another equitable lien in favor of his attorneys, and that that lien can't be overridden by his contract with U.S. Airways. There are several amicus filings. I'll just note that the U.S. government filed an amicus brief that walked the middle ground. In short, the government disagreed with McCutcheon's first argument, but it agreed with the second. The government argued that the ERISA plan should be reimbursed after McCutcheon's lawyers were paid under the common fund doctrine. This way, McCutcheon would not receive the benefits both of the plan's payments for his medical expenses and also the proceeds of his lawsuits, but he wouldn't be in a worse position either after having successfully recovered from third parties. At oral argument, many of the justices raised the predictable concern that the rule proposed by U.S. Airways would put McCutcheon in a worse position after he pursued his legal right to recover from third parties. Justice Alito also raised a practical question. He asked if U.S. Airways' position would eliminate any incentive for people like McCutcheon to pursue recovery from third parties. Several of the justices also questioned whether the terms of the plan, as a matter of contract interpretation, really should be construed to require McCutcheon to reimburse more than the net proceeds he retained after he paid his lawyers. To that point, Justice Scalia responded that McCutcheon did not timely raise any objections to the trial court's interpretation of the plan. And Justice Scalia also observed that the Supreme Court didn't grant cert in this case to interpret the terms of a particular ERISA plan. Justice Scalia's main concern seemed to center around McCutcheon's argument that equitable principles could override an unambiguous agreement. Ultimately, the oral argument centered on the theme of what trumps, clear contract terms or equity, and the rather unusual context of Section 502A3's provision of equitable relief, but only to enforce the terms of a plan. It was observed by the litigants and by the court that there is a dearth of authority on this issue. So where will this lead? Guessing what the Supreme Court will do in a particular case is always a difficult and uncertain sport. I think it's safe to assume that the court will attempt to keep its decision focused on the circumstances of this case. That is, whether an ERISA plan seeking reimbursement of money that their beneficiaries recovered from third parties can be subject to equitable limitations, even if the controlling terms of the plan documents provide for full reimbursement without limits. The court will likely steer clear of broader issues that might affect other types of claims or relief that can be sought under 502A3, such as claims that could be brought by plan participants. And finally, I'll note again that anyone who watched the argument firsthand would come away with the impression that a majority of the justices are concerned about a ruling that would make plan participants worse off for pursuing their legal rights against third parties. We'll have to wait for the court's decision to see where that concern takes us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.